Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Six months ago yesterday, the Spanish early music maestro Jordi Savall and his band rechristened Alice Tully Hall. Now, some notes of caution. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today, a status report on Lincoln Center's redevelopment plans. And the illustrator and singer-songwriter Marcellus Hall plays live. As Lincoln Center turns 50 this year, it's getting some much-needed nips and tucks, or more accurately, a $1.2 billion makeover. The 16-acre arts campus unveiled the first phase in its makeover in February with the renovated Alice Tully Hall. Audiences, musicians, and critics showered it with accolades, but a few are less encouraged. Some now fear Lincoln Center's redevelopment could end up compromising the original 1960s design of the complex, and even risk commercializing it. We'll get three views on Lincoln Center today, and we'll start with Alan Kozin, classical music critic of the New York Times, and Suzanne Stevens, deputy editor of the publication Architectural Record. To Suzanne and Alan, thank you both for being here. Suzanne, let me ask you, you wrote, "The entire effort, urbanistically, aesthetically, and acoustically, has met with deserved success. It was a big job. How did they handle it so well?"
Well, they had a lot of people.
And we should say who they are.
Okay. The architects, Diller Scafidio Renfro, and also working with FX Fell, had used a lot of different consultants, including the very esteemed acousticians Holden Jaffe, to work on this, and Arup's structural engineers. It was a huge team effort. It took a long time. They gave it a lot of thought, and they did a very, very a good job architecturally. I think acoustically, I am not an acoustician, I'm not a critic of music, but acoustically, it is just about as good as it gets.
The opening night concert featured everything from these very intimate, delicate early music instruments to, you know, much larger ensemble, and the hall seemed to handle it really well. Alan, you wrote, "I find it corporate, sterile, claustrophobic, and as acoustically arid a hall as I've ever heard."
Well, I was being polite. I went to, I would say, a dozen or 14 concerts before I wrote that. Although, actually, after a few concerts, I began writing that. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing about the acoustics. It is very clear. Things really do carry. I reviewed the Jordi Savall concert, and I like to sit in the balcony. And up there, everything carried. The problem is that it's a little dry, and it always was a little dry. Everyone complained about it being a little dry, but it wasn't quite as dry as it is now. And that became apparent when I heard a Beethoven symphony concert. You have the Eroica Symphony, starts out with two chords, you know, bump, bump. And if they sound just like what I just did, there's something wrong, because each of those chords should have at least some sort of a resonant tail coming out.
Right,
it
just kind of hangs in the air, that sense of anticipation.
Of what's, yeah. And there was absolutely nothing. I don't think I've ever heard absolutely nothing, you know. And so this is really about as dry a hall as you can get.
Now, there's a couple of things about that. One is, I would never have thought of Alice Tully Hall as a place to go see a full-on symphony orchestra anyway.
Well, it was a chamber orchestra.
It was a chamber orchestra, so it was a kind of a, you know, early classical period,
right,
size, 30 people or so?
50, 60.
Well, that's a pretty big, I mean, again, you know, for Alice Tully Hall, which over the years we've come to think of as chamber music,
right,
you know, maybe you fit a small chorus or a genuine, you know, Mozart Haydn-style chamber orchestra on that stage.
But you see, they have three stage configurations.
Right.
And the largest group I've heard is 80, which was Juilliard Orchestra. And they have, you know, different things they can do with putting up acoustical baffles up in the, you know, on the wall. And I've heard it in every possible configuration, and I'm not sure any of them really help.
Well, a lot of it needs fine-tuning as it goes on. I mean, everybody knows that in any kind of hall. They do have a lot of panels that swivel around, and it requires experience, and it requires playing
Does a hall get broken in the way a musical instrument does?
Sure, and sometimes it doesn't work. It's true. Sometimes we think something's really going to be fabulous, and because we go in here at the first night and they select things very carefully and they have tuned it just for that kind of chamber concert or whatever, and then something else comes in and it's not quite as well tuned. It's not quite as thought about. Or they don't have as much time to play with it. And then over the years, you can kind of work it out.
Is that why, Alan, you waited basically 6 months before writing your review of the hall, because you wanted to give it time to see whether the sound would kind of settle there?
Well, I'm not in terms of what Suzanne said, I'm not sure that 6 months is enough for it to settle. I mean, it'll take years, you know, to change. I just think that if you're starting with a hall that has no resonance whatsoever, I don't know where this resonance is going to come from.
Hmm. You know. Elizabeth Diller, who is part of the team, Suzanne, that did the renovation, said that Alice Tully Hall, the redone Alice Tully Hall, quote, extends the DNA, unquote, of the original building. What did she mean by that? Do you agree with it?
And I would interpret it would mean the orthogonal grid that Pietro Belluschi was working with in designing this concrete building that had based on a module and was covered with travertine and had a kind of a very rigorous geometrical system in which you could look at it and say, I can extend that. What they did, I would not call extending the DNA. I would call it as some sort of a grafting, like with a new prosthetic device from the moon. However, that said, I have to give it to them. It was a very inventive thing of extending out, using trusses to go over Broadway, change the whole diagonal of the facade, change the that alignment to go along with Broadway, and then uplifting a canopy so that it looks like you're peeling off the top, bringing the light in, and creating this whole kind of new outside and inside plaza. What they did was amazing. It was very inventive. I would have never thought you could do it. I would have never thought it would stand up. I would have never expected somebody to come along and come up with that idea.
And if you had gone to the old Alice Tully Hall, I mean, walking into that lobby was like walking into a bunker. And now it's full of light, and yet, Alan, you call it sterile and corporate.
Well, the sterile and corporate part, I'm talking about once you get past the, you know, where they take the tickets.
Right.
You go in there. That used to be actually a bit larger than it is now, and it was always as open. There were windows there. You could look out onto the street there. That was fine, and everything, you know, going down the sides of the hall. You used to have sort of glass doors that you could look through. Now you have steel gray doors. It's like going into a battleship.
But you're only there for a few seconds to get
also,
to the other door that takes you to your seat.
Well, oh, yeah. I mean, I'm there as little as possible. I mean, I
hold it. There's a lot of warm, soft Murupanga Paranga wood there from South America going along that wall in curved. You're talking about the inner wall of the lobby that moves along the south, and it is sumptuous, sensuous. I mean, what do you want?
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Then you go down a few stairs, and right. There's a gray kind of antechamber, and that is a mistake. That's a misstep. That's one of the few critiques I would have with it. But outside on the lobby, we showed a photograph of the before. I had remembered it, of course, but I mean, we showed a photograph of the before lobby and the after lobby. We showed a photograph of all the buildings before and after, of all the different, you know, the
parts
auditorium
of the building,
and different
yeah,
parts
yeah.
of the building, before and after. And it's amazing. It looked like a subway tunnel before the lobby along the south.
Hi, we're speaking with Suzanne Stevens, deputy editor of Architectural Record, Alan Kozin, classical music critic of the New York Times, talking about the renovated Alice Tully Hall. Lots of plaudits for the redo and the acoustics. Alan, less convinced. In fact, convinced the acoustics are a problem. This is how the Juilliard Orchestra sounded on opening night, conducted by David Robertson, doing some of Stravinsky's Pulcinella in Alice Tully Hall. Thank you. Now, I should hasten to point out that WNYC broadcast this opening night concert and, of course, added a bit of reverb, so this is not the sound that Alan was talking about before, the genuine arid sound of the renovated Alice Tully Hall. Arid in his ears. Suzanne Stevens was quite impressed with the acoustics of the redone hall. And we'll continue talking about that. We also want to broaden the conversation in a couple of minutes out to the rest of the Lincoln Center renovation, because there is much more to come.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
If you want to invite a new audience to try classical music, if you want them to scrape together the cost of a pair of tickets in order to try it, and you want the building to say you're welcome here, then having a large portion of the lobby say you're not welcome here unless you have another $20 for wine sends the wrong message.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.
Now, Alan, I got to admit, I wasn't even thinking along those lines the first, you know, five or six times that I went to the newly renovated Alice Tully Hall until I read your article where you talk about, you know, over half of the lobby being given over to the restaurant/cafe.
Right.
I mean, is that really mixing, sending inadvertently the wrong message?
Well, I think so, since part of the propaganda that Lincoln Center is putting out is about how this is making it, Lincoln Center in general, the renovation will make it more populist, more open to the life of the street and all that stuff. And, they show you the pictures of the Alice Tully Hall lobby, and it looks huge, and it is huge, but so much of it is a restaurant, and you can't use that if you are not sitting there eating.
But you can use it if you're not going to the concert. You can actually go and use the cafe and have a drink or have a lunch or a dinner.
But what good is that? I mean, people go there ideally to go to the concert. So if you're going to the concert and it's before the concert, you have to go over to the side, right where before the entrance, which I admit is bigger than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And more welcoming.
Well, okay, welcoming. I just want to raise one question. Why did your engineers have to put reverb on?
Because the sound, as it often is, even in a place like Carnegie Hall, which has a splendid acoustic, is usually not thick enough for broadcast. So, I mean, even in a good hall, I like Alice Tully Hall. No. we often use some kind of enhancement, even in places that have very good. I mean. We've done broadcasts from cathedrals where we've had it on standby in case we need it. Just part of the broadcast thing.
Okay.
Anyway, Soundcheck listeners, we want to know what you think. Do you find the renovated Alice Tully Hall more welcoming? What would you like to see Lincoln Center do in the next phase of renovation? You can leave a comment on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org, or you can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Suzanne, back to the lobby. It's the first thing you see before you get to the hall. Is it welcoming? And if there is this large area that you don't feel like you can go to, if you're first timer and you just don't have the wherewithal to spend $10 for a glass of wine, does that take away from the welcoming aspect?
One is you do have the steps outside in which you can, people do sit down along those steps as it goes down into the lobby itself. And they also the grandstand, there were problems in the construction of that little small grandstand that, people are supposed to use. The idea of a cafe is always considered welcoming in New York. I mean, that's why people put cafes along the street. It's to amplify street life.
Well, when they said we went there before it opened, and when they said this is where the cafe is going to be, I guess I imagined just that big bar, and then people would just be sort of milling around in front of it. But instead, you have like tables and chairs,
and it does
take up a lot of room.
That is true, and I would prefer having one bar, one section where you could actually have stand up, and then other places where you could have a cafe. But I guess they were trying to figure out traffic. I admit the ticket admission area is off to the side, is a little tiny. However, it still is very inviting. It used to have this clunky, horrible stair designed by Pietro Belluschi, taking up that space. It was just grotty from the concrete and the travertine had gotten really dirty over the years. It was disgusting. This is so different. I mean, it's, you know, it brings life into the corner of that place.
Let me read a couple of comments that have been coming in. CNH here in New York, I attended a choral concert in the New Tully Hall, and my performing friends complained bitterly that they could not hear one another on stage. They said it was like the old Philharmonic Hall stage in the bad old days. Alan, that almost sounds like the opposite of what you're talking about, where there's this kind of hyper-attenuated sound where every little thing... I mean, in your article, you compare it to looking at insect parts under a microscope.
You know, I can't really speak to what happens on the stage, though, because that's a completely different thing. And isn't it still the bad old days at Avery Fisher Hall?
That is a whole nother segment. And here's Marion in Manhattan. I have been a subscriber to the Chamber Music Society at Lincoln Center for about 30 years and eventually worked my way to lovely, comfortable seats. Oh, I think we can see where this one's going. We are now squeezed in shoulder to shoulder, even though we have the highest price tickets. Access to the halls through a dark labyrinth is bewildering to this mildly disabled, just need a cane, 76-year-old. The steps on both sides are awful for older concertgoers like me. But let's come back to the seats. There are more of them now, Suzanne, right?
Well, about 1,000, right?
I think it's 1,087. But they were not able to expand the footprint of the hall. So you have more seats in the same space. People are a little scrunched.
Yes, there's going to be a little squeezing. And, of course, also you don't have the central aisle. So you still have that.
Well, why? You know, there was no central aisle even to begin with.
There
why?
Was upstairs, though.
There was upstairs, right.
Now there isn't.
And there.
Why is that? I mean, architecturally, why would that have been done in the first place, and why would they insist on keeping it that way?
It seemed like a good idea, evidently, at the time in the late 50s, 1960s, to have this kind of bowed thing with
Did people not have laps in the 50s and 60s? I mean, you got to walk over 10 or 20 laps to get to your seat.
Totally true.
Alice Tully, I spoke to her at one point about this, and she was very involved in the design of the hall. And what she asked for was that the rows be very far apart, because she was a tall lady. She had long legs. And she went to William Schumann, who at the time was president of Lincoln Center, and said, if I can indulge in my Alice Tully imitation for a second, Bill, you're a tall man. and she persuaded him that, you know, And they felt that if you had it far apart enough, that you wouldn't really need to have an aisle in the center, because you could walk over without disturbing people.
And, of course, that's not true. But nobody's ever really corrected that. And they said this time it was just too hard to do it. They had to leave the seating.
All right. So we've been talking about details of Alice Tully Hall. In a moment, we'll broaden the conversation, because this was just really the first step in a multiple-step plan to renovate the entire campus at Lincoln Center. And we'll talk more about that. Tonight at Damrosch Park, Midsummer Night Swing out on the plaza. There are big plans for the plaza, which we'll get into in a moment. And this band, La Excelencia, will be performing there tonight. Nosotros mismos nos mandamos. Unidos somos más fuertes, pueblo latino te llamo. Juntemos nuestras voces, no nos quedemos callados. Our status report on the redevelopment of Lincoln Center continues in a moment. And coming up later, Marcellus Hall talks about living two lives, one as a songwriter and another as an accomplished illustrator. We'll hear Marcellus Hall and his band playing live later on Soundcheck. You've got yours and I've got mine. From the morning light till the day is done. It's my life. It's my life. This fanfare was composed by Stravinsky for the New York State Theater at Lincoln Center, now home to the New York City Opera and Ballet. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're debating the redevelopment of Lincoln Center on the program. So far, we've been joined by Alan Kozin, classical music critic of the New York Times, and Suzanne Stevens, deputy editor of Architectural Record. Joining us now is Gregory Dietrich. He's a preservation consultant with Gregory Dietrich Preservation Consulting, and was co-author of the National Register nomination of Lincoln Center for landmark status back in 2001. Gregory, what's next? I mean, I mentioned that all this Alice Tully Hall stuff is just phase one. What's next in the plans, and what are the concerns?
Well, there's a huge comprehensive plan underway, which is, first of all, to address the public spaces in the main campus.
So, for example, where tonight's Midsummer Night's Swing is happening,
yes,
around the fountain. There.
That's right, around the fountain, and also specifically the North Plaza, which if one walks by, one can see a lot of activity going on, specifically with a complete introduction of a new landscape into the plaza, a reconfiguration of the reflecting pool, and most notably, a new cafe by Diller Scafidio and Renfro.
Another cafe?
Yet another cafe.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm being told that the Midsummer Night's Swing tonight is in Damrosch Park. It's not by the fountain. But Damrosch Park is also one of the open spaces. Are there plans for that as well?
There are plans underway, but they're not yet revealed to what extent changes are occurring there.
Okay, so, but as a preservation consultant, let me just put this as bluntly to you as I can. What is there to preserve? I mean, the architecture has been widely panned in recent years. Do you want to preserve that?
I think that there is something really that bears noting about preservation in general, and that is that something doesn't necessarily have to be the most aesthetically pleasing to warrant significance. And in the case of Lincoln Center, we're talking about
Are you saying it doesn't have to be good to warrant preservation?
What I'm saying about Lincoln Center is that when one visits Lincoln Center, there is a distinct sense of place that one gets from the experience of that place, which I think maybe everybody in this room would agree with me is rather awe-inspiring. And maybe a bit bewildering at that. But it does represent a certain point in time in our country's history. And it certainly represents, a big sort of ideal from the post-war movement to elevate the arts, not just in New York, not just to the country at large, but on the international stage. And boy, did Lincoln Center succeed in doing that.
Well, and they literally elevated it. It's above street level,
yes.
And what seemed like elevation then seems elitist now. And you know, we're hearing words like democratic and welcoming and populist and stuff like that, which all sounds really good. So what are the concerns with that kind of redevelopment?
The concerns, because admittedly there have been urban planning ills of having to do with the actual design of the centers as it was realized from the very beginning. However, there is an aspect of really identifying what are the character-defining features of this center that are worth preserving. And I thought it was interesting in Alan's article how he did note that when one was looking from Broadway toward the center, one sees a very open plaza which is highly animated, especially at performance time. The Lincoln Center Plaza being really a place of arrival and departure, much like the Piazza San Marco, in which was serving as the model.
Suzanne, I mean, just in terms, as you know, from an architectural point of view, just because architecture has gone out of fashion. I mean, we've seen this with virtually every kind of architecture, you know, from Victorian to Georgian, Edwardian. I mean, everything comes back at some point. Is there a danger of looking at Lincoln Center's campus saying, oh, my gosh, these 50-year-old buildings, they're just awful. Tear them down, start again.
Yes, of course. Land, it's low-rise, there's any kind of danger. And while I'm for preservation in terms of the low-rise complex and its plan, I'm not necessarily for keeping everything absolutely the same it was. When it was built, it was criticized at the time even by the architects working on it. They were fighting like cats and dogs. Philip Johnson said, Wallace Harrison, who was in charge of the Met Opera House, did the worst kind of building, most reprehensible, but Wallace hates my building and I made mistakes, Philip said, in these tapes that are recently published by Monticelli Press. He said it was called Philip Johnson Tapes, it's hysterical on Lincoln Center. He said that Wally was such a weak person, but he hated my building. He said he had every right to hate my building because the exterior, I was having trouble with the exterior. I actually don't like what I did with the columns. And he said everybody was doing a horrible job. They were all, where were the critics at the time in the late 50s to call them out? Ada Louise Huxtable hadn't begun being a critic at the New York Times yet until 63. And by the time she was actually turning to Lincoln Center, its quieter buildings were then being built. Gordon Bunshaft's
I gotta tell you, you're not making me want to like storm the barricades to preserve any of this.
I know. So I'm just saying that there's a history. It's hard to preserve when you know the history of the controversy that went on.
All right, well, the great
but
finish.
I would say not towers. You don't want to have more mistakes. You want to just tinker with it where it needs and be sensitive, and I think you have a good team to do it.
What about Eero Saarinen, the great Finnish architect, his contribution to the Vivian Beaumont Theater? Gregor, they're talking about putting something on top of that?
A
is that right?
A rooftop addition, which would consist of a black box of theater there, yes.
And is that a concern, or does that seem like a good idea?
It is a concern. It also is a bit curious just because the Mitzi Newhouse Theater was supposed to satisfy that particular aspect of programming for Lincoln Center Theater. So one does wonder, but I have to say that I do agree with Suzanne in terms of the fact that one doesn't want to freeze the center in time. Certainly not. There is room for improvement. The question is, how are the improvements made, and what are people doing in terms of really considering the historic aspects, the character-defining features, as I said before? I think right now, when one is standing in front of Alice Tully Hall and looking toward the Vivian Beaumont Theater, and to see the Diller Scafidio Cafe now rising up, that is a huge intrusion on really a public space, because all the plazas are owned by the City of New York. Mm. That really was an incredible ensemble reflecting a modern aesthetic. That is Daniel Kiley's landscape, Henry Moore sculpture, fronting this wonderful building by Eero Saarinen.
And you come back to the idea of the cafe, Alan. You know, like I said in the first segment, you know, you're writing about the cafe in the lobby of the Alice Tully Hall, the newly redesigned Alice Tully Hall. It was sort of a striking thing. There is this plan for this other cafe.
Yeah.
I mean,
why not make the whole place a food court?
Voter from Brooklyn writes this: I haven't been to the new hall, but on the restaurant, what's more important, refreshing and pleasing in today's public architecture? Another restaurant cafe, commercial possibility, or grand public spaces allowed to just be? I'm assuming that's a rhetorical question, but I'll pose it to you, Alan, anyway.
Well, I would take number three, or else I would open a Tower Records in there. And
nicely done. I'm going to leave the last word there with Alan Kozin of the New York Times. We've also been speaking with Suzanne Stevens of Architectural Record and Gregory Dietrich, preservation consultant, who was a co-author of the Lincoln Center National Register nomination, which ended up not happening. But the renovation goes on apace, and you can check out the soundcheck page of our website at wnyc.org for more details. Coming up in just a moment, live music in our studio from Marcellus Hall. You might know his illustrations on the cover of The New Yorker. You might get a chance to hear his band playing some music here in our studio in just a moment. And tomorrow on the show, the transformation of rock from decadent to holistic. We'll look at a festival that's uniting the worlds of rock and yoga tomorrow on Soundcheck.